fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Hood.
I'm gonna kill you. Welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday. It is Friday, June 4th, and we are ready to tell your odd but true stories. And we just got a message, and I'm sure if you signed up for Crime Wave at Sea right before we started, a message, breaking news, Crime Wave breaking at Sea is now 90% sold, which means if you've been on the fence thinking about it, even though it's next February 8th through 12th, now's the time to make the choice.
Yeah. It's not just our listeners that are trying to get tickets. It's 10 other shows listeners. So that 90% applies to everybody.
Everybody. Everybody that loves Case File, that wants to see Casey from Case File in person, real life, being interviewed by the amazing Australian true crime writer, Vicky Petratus. If you want to see Last Podcast on the Left Side stories, Henry and Eddie, you do. You absolutely do. You want to just be in the same air as those men. I'll tell you that. They're like the walking greenest flags, nicest, funniest guys, and just bring the vibe.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Earlier, I was thinking about both of them at karaoke.
Goddamn.
And just how fucking fun that was.
And so good.
And also how good they both are at singing. Like, they're very talented.
I found my thrill. I think about Eddie singing that all the time. They're both incredible. So come see us. Come see the guys from Last Podcast. Come see True Crime Campfire. You come see A Paranormal Chicks. There is such a fun lineup. Richard from Unexplained is going to be there. We've been, we tried to adopt
love Richard
into our
never
sinister
met fam. Someone that could say more inappropriate things at the wrong times than my husband until meeting
me.
Richard.
Yeah, exactly.
For you. Yeah.
Seconds later. So come see us February 8th through 12th and do it now. I think it's $99 now down to start. And then there's a payment plan throughout. You also can split the room with somebody else. So head to our Discord over on Patreon and make a friend and shout out to everybody who's already coming. We can't wait to see you and hug you in real life and sail away from this place.
And if you use our code Sinister, then you get $100 off your cabin fee and a meet and greet with us.
Can't wait, man.
We love to meet and greet all of you.
I'm ready to meet them and to greet them. So come see us, crimewaveandsea.com/sinister. And in the meantime, we've got some sinister tales lined up here that you have
six of them.
You've all generously sent to us. So thank you
all. Yes. Thank you all so much to everyone who sent in your stories. I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from Sarah and is called My Family Friend Died Under Police Supervision. Trigger warning for emetophobia. Sarah writes, Hi ladies, obligatory love you mean it. Thank you for being so hilarious and for keeping me sane during grueling 5 a.m. stalking shifts at work. I appreciate how you handle true crime cases and how much care and compassion you give to the victims. That's why I wanted to share this specific story with you. As the title states, my family friend died under police supervision. This is not an easy story to hear, and it's taken me a long time to find the right words to tell it, so hopefully I'm doing him justice. His name was Danny Ford, and he died on August 16, 2023, in the La Plata County Detention Facility in Durango, Colorado. Danny suffered from drug addiction and was arrested on August 11th after failing to appear in court for drug-related charges. He was on fentanyl at the time of his arrest. He was sent to the medical center at the detention center for detox monitoring. Now, some important information about this facility before I continue. They only ever have one nurse on duty for a jail that houses up to 260 people at a time. A nurse will work a 12-hour shift from 6 to 6, and then another nurse will come in to take over. No other medical personnel are on staff. During the time Danny was in the medical center, normal detox symptoms began to subside, but he continued to have abnormal vital signs, high blood pressure, elevated heart rate, and fast breathing. He was vomiting, and he kept collapsing during medical exams. Apparently, some members of the jail staff said he was just faking these symptoms. So naturally, instead of keeping him for further observation, he was released into Gen Pop on August 15th. Over the night of the 15th and into the 16th, he complained of sharp stomach pain. He kept falling and kept vomiting. He requested more medical attention all night. The morning of the 16th, one of the nurses finally came to see him. She registered that his pain level was a 10 out of 10, but instead of sending him to a hospital, she moved him to a private cell in the jail's booking area around 7 a.m. This was so deputies could monitor him throughout the day. However, she did not tell them why he was being moved for monitoring, and she never came back to check on him. Throughout the day, Danny kept vomiting and crying out for medical attention. He was ignored by the deputies until his vomit covered his cell and they had to move him to a new one. This happened twice, and the last time they moved him, they told him that he needed to vomit into the drain in the floor because they weren't moving him again. By this time, Danny was vomiting blood, and it looked like coffee grounds. I'm not a medical professional, but even I know you need immediate medical attention for vomit that looks like that. But of course, they did absolutely nothing for him. I will take the time to mention that his last cell had a camera, so these last hours of his life were recorded. I have seen small clips of the recording, and it is absolutely devastating to see how much pain he was in and how everyone there just ignored him. The night nurse allegedly did a few walk-bys when she came on shift for the night, but never checked in on him despite his constant cries for help. Finally, around 10 p.m. on August 16th, she entered his cell only to find Danny dead in a pool of vomit. His official cause of death was peritonitis due to a perforated duodenal ulcer. In non-medical terms, Pop's stomach ulcer caused a hole in his small intestine, which caused fatal inflammation in his abdomen. One article about his death aptly stated that this killed plenty of people in the Old West, but is easily treatable in the 21st century. Danny's family filed a wrongful death suit against La Plata County and Southern Health Partners last summer, the company the jail contracts with for nurses. The county recently settled the suit and has agreed to cooperate in the suit against Southern Health Partners, despite still having them as a contractor. He was in the booking area for 15 hours before dying. If anyone during that time had called for help, Danny would still be here. If anyone had called for medical help in the days before he was moved to the booking area, he would still be here. There were so many opportunities to help him, and everyone at the La Plata County Detention Facility ignored him. Danny deserved so much more. He deserved help and human decency, and he deserves to still be here today. He deserved to get medical help for his addiction rather than jail time. His family and friends deserve to have him here, and not to have endured the trauma of his death. It's been almost 3 years since his death, and it still makes me cry to think about how much he suffered in his last days. No one deserves to die like that. Thank you, ladies, for everything you do. Even if this doesn't end up on the air, thank you for reading Danny's story. Sarah.
I'm so sorry you lost your friend, Sarah. This was, at every point, it feels like Danny was failed.
Yes, from the minute he set foot in there until the minute they took him out.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of piqued my interest was the fact that he was there for failing to appear on drug charges, which shows he was already in the system. They were aware of his, you know, medical history, at least, you know, that he has had issues with opioid addiction. And I think having one nurse for 260 inmates, when any of them are fighting active opioid withdrawals, is violative of the Eighth Amendment prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment, in my opinion. I mean, I think there's Supreme Court statute or Supreme Court decisions have said, you know, there are certain medical standards, adequate medical care must be provided to inmates. Deliberate indifference to serious medical conditions or needs is, you know, constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. So that clearly is what happened here. But overall, I think the framework shows that we're failing our neighbors, our friends, our brothers and sisters, that serious opioid addiction is not something that should be criminalized. That should be the first thing is that you're sent to a jail. The first, like, absolutely, we should have large scale drug treatment facilities where the idea is rehabilitation, not just like let them puke until probably they won't die. Hopefully they'll feel better, because these, to the nurse's credit, not even credit, but like she's one nurse on a 12-hour shift for 260 other inmates. Like, that's a impossible position to be in. She should never be put in that position. She should not be monitoring a person in active opioid withdrawal. I'm so sorry. This is horrific.
Yeah, one nurse for 260 people, even if everyone's healthy, is you're set up to fail.
Yeah.
If you have someone that is actively crying out for help, and even though you have 259 other patients, mm-hmm. It's your job to go in there and help him. And mm-hmm. it is recorded. So arguably someone's watching a camera, perhaps everyone certainly hears him. They know how sick he is. They've moved him to two cells. Mm-hmm. It's very much giving, he's an addict. Who cares? Just let him die.
Yeah. Like they said, you're probably faking it or whatever. No, I think mm-hmm. you're absolutely right. Under any standard of nursing care, a patient who said, I have 10 out of 10 pain and then mm-hmm. no monitoring follow-up at all, and then transferring him to a booking cell versus an actual, I don't know, hospital bed, something where his vitals can be monitored. That is obviously why the county likely settled the case, because
yeah.
it's classic. It's probably tactical because they knew that they're very exposed. There's footage. There's what I don't understand, though, is as a county, if you've acknowledged the contractor that we keep is inadequate and could not, in fact, ever have saved this guy because she just wasn't going to do it. You know, she didn't have the bandwidth or whatever, then that is a contract that needs to be questioned. Why are we, our tax dollars, paying for inadequate medical care that's leading to, yes, the horrifically on a human level, the death of our friend, family member, neighbor, but also, like, even if you're just a cold-hearted bastard who cares about money, you don't want to have to be paying out claims against estates for killing people when it very easily, just send him to the fucking hospital. He would have lived. Like they said, this is something in the Wild West. Like nobody dies of this anymore. This is some like the fucking Oregon Trail disease. Like why, you know, it's literally just negligence. So I'm so sorry.
Well, if you are a privately funded prison mm-hmm. and it's probably cheaper for you to just pay out a settlement of $5 million to the family of someone that was in their care that died, rather than spend more money on more adequate healthcare. Like you're like, yeah, we'll take the $5 million hit because it cost us $50 million to get the right amount of healthcare we need here.
No, it's true. Yeah.
So right. Unfortunately, everybody's just a number, and it doesn't sound like this prison in particular has a lot of human compassion.
No, not at all. And you're right. And even, I mean, the whole prison system itself is a huge financial ecosystem, whereas even this is the Lapata County Detention Facility is a county-run jail, so it's not even a private prison, but they have private contracts with companies that don't give a fuck. Like you said, the Health Partners company is like, how few workers can we have that's mm-hmm. like the skinniest margin, and also what's the maximum amount we can charge per inmate for this? Per what, you know, them putting him in another cell or whatever is like, you had a visit with a nurse, we're going to charge you for that. And it's like, she didn't even visit with him. So we're just getting, you know, our asses kicked from every direction. And the truth of it is that human beings are physically, painfully suffering because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from opioid and just neglect within jails and prisons. But
no, seriously.
To your point, and Sarah, to your point of he shouldn't have even been there. Completely agree. He should have been in a medical facility, a rehab facility where people there are trained for this exact thing and aren't going to ignore him. They're going to help him. What good does being in prison do if you're not even trying to rehabilitate someone?
No, not at all. And it's just another way for a company like the Southern Health Partners or whatever, not Southern, the SHP company, to just make money. Like, just, they see them, like you said, is all just like numbers on a sheet and not human beings. In a very brief Google search, they've been sued like across the country, like other states, because they're, you know, a nationwide company that contracts with, you know, cities, counties, whatever. And I'm fairly sure it shows a systemic issue. So it's not it's just this one poor nurse, this one lady. It's like, no, hell no. They probably run a lean ass operation as lean as they can. And, you know, like I said, if you got to pay out a couple grand here and there for settlements, fuck it, whatever. Cost of doing business.
Yeah. I don't know how we get more nurses employed in that kind of a role. It seems like some sort of a bill or law should be passed that 260-1 is an unacceptable ratio.
Well, and that's what it feels like. And that they have at least one other case was involved a person who was actively fighting an addiction. And you know, he was, they said, well, his physical appearance, he was looking kind of rough. So we just assumed it was that. It's like, well, fucking help a person. Lock him in a cell. Don't pay attention to what happens. Just let him die. Pay out less than $1 million. And you're like, well, each of our contracts with all these counties is like millions and millions of dollars. So $750K, it's just sick. But thank you for sharing this story, Sarah. And hopefully, you know, elected officials will start looking twice at re-signing contracts with these very negligent companies.
Well, thank you again, Sarah, for sending that in. And we're so very sorry for what happened to your friend and how much he was failed.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
This next one is from Anonymous, who says, hi, Mama Heather.
Hello, my darling.
And is called The Missing Scientists Keep Me Up at Night. Hi, ladies. I've been listening to you for years now, and I found out about Sinisterhood through a random conversation I had with a local store owner. She saw me wearing another True Crime Pods merch, and after we fangirled a bit, she suggested I give Sinisterhood a try. And boy, I'm not exaggerating when I say this podcast has rocketed to the top of my favorite podcast. I enjoy Heather's clever and informative takes. I've learned so much about legal proceedings just from listening. And Christy's Mama Bear persona that makes me feel warm and fuzzy, knowing that such compassionate people are out there looking out for others. Oh, and both of you feel like you could be my hilarious, fun aunts. You know, the ones at a family dinner with whom you sneak off to half a glass of wine. Okay, enough of the gushing, on to my tale. I live in Huntsville, Alabama, which is self-described as Rocket City. This city was a middle-of-nowhere rural town with a smattering of houses here and there, and plenty of marshes and swampland before NASA set up camp here. This attracted a lot of top engineers and scientists. Yes, there's a difference, and they make sure you know it. And the town grew into the metropolis that it is today. Current-day Huntsville is a fusion of townies who have family roots here dating back to the early 60s, second- or third-generation Germans whose families were brought here as part of Operation Paperclip – that's a whole other fascinating and sordid story – and new transplants looking for a place to practice science while enjoying Alabama's cheaper cost of living, abundance of nature, and lower property taxes. The joke is that you're only a stone's throw away from someone whose grandpa worked on the famous Skylab project. For those who aren't as indoctrinated in the space geek culture, Skylab was the first U.S. first space station launched, and it was primarily developed in Huntsville. Having grown up in Alabama, I'd always considered Huntsville a kind of redneck mini Silicon Valley. While we have the highest concentration of engineers per capita of any U.S. city, people are often surprised when I tell them that Alabama has a major NASA center, one of only 10 in the country, and that I worked there at one time. Yes, as a young, naive, 19-year-old intern, I had to get a public trust clearance and pass a federal background check before getting my security badge, which I then used every morning of my internship to get through a highly secured military entrance behind which NASA facilities were located. It seemed a little daunting, sure, but considering how many people I knew that worked on the base, it didn't seem too out of the ordinary. It was only scary when I once witnessed a car try to speed past the military checkpoint and spike strips promptly deployed while the entire security personnel nearby swarmed the area. So, suffice to say, the whole Madison County economy relies on Federal Department of Defense. Thankfully, most people around here refuse to call it Department of War. Funding. And I think most people would be surprised to know that probably every other person has a security clearance in Huntsville. Okay, that might be a slight exaggeration, but seriously, you have to have one in order to work on Redstone Arsenal, where most of the jobs are. Even HVAC employees and food truck workers and janitorial services have to be vetted and receive some level of clearance to enter the arsenal. We're also one of the top known areas for studying UAPs. And a couple of companies around here have been making news for their rumored UAP research. Now that I've painted the picture of this weird city tucked away in Alabama, imagine my shock when I hear Huntsville, Alabama mentioned on your podcast during my drive home from the store. I was shook, to say the least. I couldn't even finish the series, despite being an avid listener. Sorry, gals, I'll try to muster up the courage to finish it one day. Because I was gripped with anxiety. I mean, not to make you guys feel guilty, but I almost had a panic attack. I was that affected. See, locally, we have been all too familiar around here about the case of missing and dead scientists. Our local law enforcement doesn't really have the best relationship with the community, and transparency has been a hot topic for a while. With the cases of Amy Eskridge and Joshua LeBlanc in the national spotlight, community members have yet again started speaking up about our mistrust of local police dealings and supposed transparency. It hasn't set well with many locals that the police and FBI were quick to close those cases without further investigation and without disclosing much to the public. But then again, we've come to expect this from our law enforcement officers, unfortunately. While I no longer work on the arsenal, I know I'm not alone in worrying about my loved ones who do work there and are high up in their fields regarding scientific research. I'm purposely trying to stay vague to protect them, but just know that I've had talks with a particular loved one who, I might add, has a high level of security clearance. Did you know you get more secret than top secret? Requesting that they be careful with whatever they're working on that they can never discuss with us. Listening to your podcast that day really validated my anxiety about my loved one's well-being. And while I toss and turn at night worrying, it's a slight comfort to hear more and more people shedding light on this weirdness. Hopefully this will stop with all of the attention, or maybe we'll get the answers we all deserve. As a side note, the top theory from those seeking to put logic to the unexplained coincidences is that maybe these scientists were targeted by big tech companies that were hell-bent on eliminating competition. Kind of like a sick, if you won't work for us, then we'll make sure you don't work for anyone threat. What do you ladies think? Do you think old Elon or Bezos or anyone in their echelon would go to that level in the spirit of capitalist competition?
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Easily.
No question about it.
No, easily.
Easiest question I've answered all day.
Certainly. I mean, and they have the amount of resources that you just sort of mention it to someone.
Yeah.
Not like find the person who's discovered zero point energy and kill them. Although maybe, but it could just be like, if anyone had discovered that, we have the resources to make sure they can't use it. And I don't need to know what happens and those resources. Yeah. And there's just people that get paid with $1 trillion. Elon Musk has to count. He would have to count one number a second, every second for 31,000 years to get to however many, which David Sedaris' new book, he goes, I don't have a problem with rich people, but I think however much money you have to count it. You have to sit down and count it.
Every
day. You can keep it. Then you can keep it. And if it's going to take you 31,000 years to count it, you don't get to keep that
you
money.
You don't get to
that's
keep it.
Too much money.
No, that's to put it in those terms is insane.
No, it's wild. You can't even, because I think we think like a million and then twice a million is a billion and twice a billion is a trillion. And you're
not
like,
even
no,
close.
No, it's so many more than that.
No,
it's so very
1 billion
more.
Is so much more than 100 million.
Yeah.
That it's, I mean, when you look at like when they do the rice comparison, like one grain of rice is 1 million and then it's a whole mound of them, and like, and this is a billion.
Yeah.
There's, and then you're like, and here's a trillion.
Yeah.
So yeah, a trillionaire could pay anybody anything without it even making a dent in their pocketbook.
Yeah.
To
no,
be
no.
Like you said, like, we all know that this could never happen, right? So I'm just saying, if it ever does, everybody has carte blanche to do what you need to do. And I don't need to know about it, but you can do whatever you got to do.
Mm-hmm. They're like, ixnay the iantist say. Like, I did not ever say it, did I? It's like, you don't have to.
Engineer
like I
said, A, which there are a difference, and they certainly will tell you. Scientists and engineers are two different things. So I'm so sorry that your loved ones are working there. It's, I mean, you know, I'm sure thousands of people work there, and it's a handful that have, we're still wondering what's happened. So it's not like it couldn't happen, but the odds are in your favor that it won't. It's still scary, and scary to know that this is kind of stemming from your hometown.
Yeah, especially when you start hearing, you're like, I'm in a small, you know, it's not, you. If you know, enclave of scientists and engineers, but then it's like, it's kind of on the national news. And then again, and then again, and then a third time, I can see how you would get nervous such to the point of turning it off. So no hard feelings whatsoever.
Yeah,
especially if you have somebody that you care about that's similarly situated. But yeah, if they've got Q security clearance or black level security clearance, it's crazy. You get like way up there, like where
Dang,
even the president
what's
don't
the highest?
It. I don't know. I'm probably I'm not sure. Probably
not
something
top secret. So they should rename it.
Yeah.
Top secret, toppest secret.
Yeah.
Toppy toppest secret.
Tippy top secret. Is
tippy
what
top secret.
The number one is. Yeah.
That's I bet the clearance security ad like.
The highest one, they probably would never tell us.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But if your loved one has it, definitely tell them. Just keep a keep a lid on it. Don't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sending that in.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
This next one is from Kane and is called Another Found Firearm. I was inspired by Max's story on finding a gun in this week's Freaky Friday and wanted to write in this one. This isn't my own story, but my uncle's, although he's around 10 years younger than me, and I have permission to share. I'm from South Shields, which you previously covered in your episode on the South Shields Poltergeist. Here in the UK, we do not really have a gun culture, and guns and gun violence are pretty rare. When my uncle was 13 years old, he and a couple of his friends were looking for a BMX ramp they had built in some bushes in a more remote, grassy area of our town. What they found was actually cylinder. They began to shake it and then opened it up, only to find a sawed-off shotgun inside. Being teenage boys, again with no real reference to guns other than video games and TV, initially they were very excited about the discovery and kind of passed it around, before that excitement quickly turned to panic. They were worried they would get in trouble. They put the gun back where they'd found it and quickly left the area to go play on the beach instead, and vowed to each other to keep it a secret. Later that evening, when my uncle got home, he immediately told his ma'am, my Nana, about the discovery, as he knew it wasn't right to keep it secret. My Nana is a true, quote, crime junkie type and wasted no time at all calling the police. My uncle told her that after he touched the weapon, he panicked about his fingerprints being found on it and tried to wipe them off with his spit. The police turned up at the house relatively quickly, and my uncle confidently escorted them to where he found the weapon. He told them exactly what happened. He was given an award at school for his bravery and doing the right thing by telling an adult. The weapon was used as evidence in court and ended up being influential in bringing justice to an incredibly heartbreaking case of a father who had been brutally shot and killed outside of his takeaway restaurant. The weapon contained blood evidence that was linked to one of the perpetrators in that case. Tipu Sultan was the 32-year-old dad and takeaway owner. He was killed at close range, and now more than 11 years later, it is still a mystery as to what the motive was. The killing shook our community to the core, and more than 800 people attended his funeral service. I have linked some articles about the case so you can read a little more yourselves, but it was just a senseless and heartless attack on a much-loved family man and member of the community. Thank you so much for all that you do. I'm a longtime listener, and you feel like old friends. Your podcast has gotten me through a master's degree, a global pandemic, multiple house moves, and the newborn trenches with both of my babies. Thank you for giving me and others a chance to share our stories. Kane.
Aw, Kane. Well, thank you for sharing this story with us. Yeah, Tipu looked very beloved, and it was horrifying. They said he was out front of the restaurant he owns, and he was shot in full view of his father and a chef that worked there. So just horrific. But your uncle's actions were cited as one of the reasons why the killer was convicted. And both of the killers denied they did it. They said, you know, wasn't us at all, had nothing to do with us. Well, then how's your blood on the sawed-off shotgun that's found? But it said, you know, found by children in a field or whatever. So we always wonder, like, oh my gosh, who was that person that found that key piece of evidence? And sometimes it's just you're trying to find your BMX ramp and you can't find it. And you're like, what the fuck is this? So
Dude. He
is a hero. I'm glad he was commended for turning that in.
Absolutely. That's great to recognize brave efforts like that with children, because so often they are like, we can't tell anybody about this. We're going to get in trouble. And it's like, well, someone else could probably come along and find that. It might not have the same idea as you, or the people that used it come back and get it because they know where they hid it.
Mm-hmm. They would go throw it in the, you know, the dump or whatever, throw it in the ocean. So I'm glad it was found by an honest kid who had a crime interested mother who was willing to call the police as well. Especially something like this where it's like no motive. It wasn't like, well, mm-hmm. we tracked it down. There was a business dispute or something like that, where it's seemingly just random. I mean, literally authorities have nothing to go on. So something like this is the key. So it's a lesson to us all. You know, don't you tell your kids no secrets. We can have surprises. It's like, don't yes. keep a secret from mom. And that rule, you know, helps solve a case.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Kane. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. This next one is from Jane, and the subject line is Bad Men at Work. Hi, Sinisterhood. I am a recent transplant to your podcast and discovered you through a live recording via Last Podcast on the Left from Crime Wave at Sea. I was instantly like, where have these incredible women been my whole life? I immediately joined Patreon, and I've been binging from 2018 to the present. I think I'm currently in 2024. Just recently listened to Freaky Friday 157, where there was a theme of bad men, particularly bad men at work. I have two instances that are brief, but I think impactful. Both occurred when I was in my teens, which makes it creepier. When I was about 15, I worked in a local grocery store. It was a pretty small town, and we had our regular customers. One afternoon, I was working at the 10 items or less line, which meant I was both ringing and bagging with no bagger at the end of the aisle. A regular, who was an older gentleman, joined my line. He was in his late 70s, possibly early 80s, and had always been very kind. I smiled and said hello, and we did our regular checkout. Before he left, he said, "If only I was 20 years old." I looked at him, somewhat confused, until I realized what he was saying. I awkwardly smiled while feeling deep shame and revulsion. I don't know if I grasped the complexity of that irksome feeling at the time, but in that moment, all I knew was I felt very icky, and I did not want him looking at me anymore. As an adult, I wish I had requested that he finish that statement. What? You wish you were 20 years old, so what? Make him say it out loud. Say that you wish you were 20 years old so that you could sexually pursue me, the child I am currently. I strive to teach my daughter that this is the reaction she should have when confronted with this thinly veiled harassment disguised as a compliment. Another workplace harassment episode occurred when I worked at a retail store that sold clothing mainly for teens and early 20-somethings. Picture scantily clad black and white photos of very young models adorning storefronts and very loud music accompanied by a very distinct perfume sprayed all around the store on a regular basis. This was in the early 2000s, and I was at the register and also responsible for answering any phone calls that came in on the landline. The phone rang, and there was a man on the other end. He told me that he was shopping for his niece and wanted a recommendation on what he should purchase for her. I advised him that we have a great selection of jeans, and she would be happy with any of them. He asked me what I would pair with the jeans, so I recommended one of our trendy new tops. He then asked me what I would wear under the jeans. I then understood that you could be sexually harassed over the phone. With that new experience, I politely told the caller he would probably have a better experience shopping in-store and hung up. I felt so disgusting after the interaction. These are two tiny everyday scenarios that are all too commonplace for women to endure. It feels so unfair that just existing in a workplace as a woman can put you in a position, even over the phone, to have this type of uncomfortable experience. The fact that it has stayed with me for over 20 years speaks volumes to how this kind of misogyny is not just boys will be boys or old men will be old men. It is a cultural and systemic problem that I hope our future generations are working to correct, myself included, raising a son. Thank you both for all you've given me over the last year. I found you at a time that I truly needed you. I will be forever grateful. Jane. P.S. I am a New Yorker that has started saying y'all because I have you in my ears so many hours per day. Love y'all to the moon and back.
Oh, well, I'm going to take a wild guess and say you worked at Abercrombie.
Yes, Summer Hollister.
Fuck that store to the moon and back. If you want to see a documentary that will make your blood boil, go watch that one. And it's just, man, built on a bunch of misogyny and, rampant sexism, especially targeting underage girls. Mm-hmm. So while the person that called you there did not work there, I'm so sorry that we've had so many people write in about those exact same things. And you were correct. 20 years later, you still remember it.
Yeah.
That's the type of lasting mark it can leave when you're that young and you have somebody say something that's just so gross to you. Like this old man, we're all supposed to think, oh, we can trust like an 80-year-old man.
No.
He's still a man.
First of all, we cannot ask John Kiriakou what happened when he got to jail and there was an 80-year-old man and he starts asking him what he's doing and it turns out he was trying to buy a child. Yeah. So there's a bunch of fucking perverts everywhere. And I think cutesy little jokes like that of like, oh, if I was younger, it's one thing. I don't even know if I would like it if I was in my 20s. But to say something like that to a 15-year-old is like, kick his cane out from under him. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, fuck
well,
that.
Well, and he's 20.
Yeah.
So that's still illegal, like, bitch. What do you mean? So now you're a 20-year-old dating a 15-year-old? Hello?
Yeah.
Still illegal.
You can't do math, man. Can't do math.
No.
And also, like, what are you going to wear under the jeans? Like, the person that is a pervert enough to look up the phone number for Hollister, Abercrombie, whatever it is, dial it up, wait for her to answer, and then while the music goes in the behind, be like, oh, I'm just shopping for my niece. Mm-hmm. Like, may you choke on your telephone cord, truly.
Yeah.
Because it was back in the 2000s, I assumed it was a corded phone. But yeah, folks like this, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Jane. And we can't just write it off and be like, oh, he was joking. Can't you just take a joke? I think we need to turn it around and have it be like, what the fuck? Why would you say that?
Yeah,
I always think
this isn't funny.
Amy Poehler making some joke and Jimmy Fallon being like, I don't think that's funny. And her being like, I don't give a fuck what you think is funny. Like, I think about that all the time. It's like, say something. You can't say that to me. Like, fuck you. So proud of you for raising a son that is going to contribute to a better world and teaching your daughter that, like, no, being like, what do you mean by that? And I think you're right. Like, oftentimes a sideways joke that was trying to be played off by a joke, if you're like, I don't understand it, could you explain why that would be an appropriate thing to say? And just kind of play dumb. They'll panic. They'll back up anytime. They're like, oh,
It's very well put to call it a thinly veiled harassment disguised as a compliment. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is. And when girls or women do push back is when it's like, I was trying to give you a compliment, you mean little bitch.
Yeah.
I was trying to say that you're pretty. It's like, sorry, old man, go die already because I'm 15 years old.
I'm always like, here's the thing. When you're saying, I find you attractive, we have to extrapolate that to its extension, which is, I would like to fuck you. And that's an impolite thing to say, because why are we physically attracted to anything other than you want to have some sort of amorous contact with that person? So to say, I'm sorry, I just wish I was younger so I could get with you. The implication is, I'd fuck you if I wasn't so old. And
yikes,
like, we are in a
position. That's so harsh.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like, we're in a position where it's like, don't say that to people. Like, well, can't you take a compliment? You know, it might be, it's one thing to go, it's so nice to see you at this register. You're always so pleasant. You make my day. Thank you for being so kind to me. That's not the same as like, if I was younger, like, get out of here.
Yeah. It sounds like they had been in contact many times if he was a regular, which speaks to, he probably thought about it several times before saying that to you.
Yeah. So I'm sorry it stuck with you. I'm sorry.
And I hope that both of those situations, if you told a manager, whoever, that they took you seriously and did something about it, because especially back then, people just kind of did chalk it up to, oh, he's an old man. Just if he comes back, just we'll send him to another line or you can go on break or something. It's like, that isn't stopping him from doing what he's going to do, though. It's just removing me from the situation, which I don't feel like I should be the one that has to be removed.
No, you're right. It was always more an emphasis on politeness and a lack of any type of altercation. Like, well, we don't want to say something, but hopefully we've now moved into a new era that easily it's like, get out of here. No, you can't talk to anybody like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Jane. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. This next one is from Wells, and the subject line is 3 girls, 1 haunted house, and some cats who are smarter than us all. Content warning, mention of suicide. Hello, ladies. I wrote in to Freaky Friday 191 with a few stories about my experiences in Savannah. My husband, my 5 kids, and I all saw figures in the window of the Moon River Brewing Company, only to be shown that we were looking at an empty room, and interacting with a few ghosts when we got married at a supposedly haunted Kehoe house, by way of reminder. I wanted to write in again to tell you about the time that I inadvertently stayed in a legit haunted house on Halloween. I attended a very small Christian college in the northern suburbs of Chicago. A friend of my best friend at the time was asked to house sit in Lake Forest, a wealthy enclave near our school. The individual who typically house sat for this family, I'll call her Kay, was unavailable to watch over the house on Halloween weekend, so the family asked our mutual friend Chris. Because it was a large house and she had never been there before, Chris asked me and my best friend Sarah to stay the weekend with her. Glad for a chance to get off campus, we agreed. I should start by saying that while my mother is in no way woo and is a dedicated church lady, she has always told me to listen to my inner voice and to pay attention when those gut feelings if they tell you that something isn't quite right. In fact, she and my father have actually canceled entire trips just because she had a feeling. It's a bit of advice I've always tried to heed and which I've passed on to my own kids. Anyway, we pull up to this house, a large three-story wooden structure with a basement surrounded by lots of trees, on Friday evening. The mother of the family who lived there was an artist. In fact, the third floor was actually a loft which she used as her studio. So the outside and inside were a bit eclectic. As soon as I walked in, I got that feeling and immediately said, "This house is weird. I don't like it here." Warning sign number one. Then, as soon as the door was open, all of the animals living in the house, a few cats and a dog, ran out of the door like they were literally being chased. Warning sign number two. Despite looking for them in the overgrown yard and neighborhood, we were never able to locate them. At the time, I was very allergic to cats, something I've clearly overcome in the ensuing years as I have officially become a cat lady and own seven of them. It was agreed that I would stay in the daughter's room, as she was apparently also allergic to cats, so they were not allowed in her room. My best friend Sarah and Chris would stay in the parents' room. I walked up the creaky wooden stairs to put my stuff in the daughter's room. As soon as I opened the door, I said, "Nope, not staying in here," and decided to tough out my allergies by sleeping with the other two girls. The daughter's room was creepy, dark, still. There was a wooden toy cradle in the middle of the room, which seemed odd given that the daughter was out of college. It didn't move or do anything spooky, but it also didn't do anything to lessen the creepy vibe. Later that evening, which was also Halloween, we decided to go out. The other two girls took up all the space and outlets in the parents' bathroom, so I went to the daughter's bathroom, located just outside her bedroom, to dry my hair. It was an older bathroom, and the vanity sink mirror was just across from the tub, which was concealed by a shower curtain. As I stood there, looking in the mirror and drying my hair, I could see the shower curtain behind me. Once again, that feeling crept over me, despite the fact that nothing had actually happened. I grabbed my shit and me and my wet hair ran back to the room with the other girls. Warning sign number three. Later that night, as all three of us were sandwiched together on that queen bed, and after some discussion regarding how weird the house was, I drifted off to sleep, only to wake up hours later incredibly thirsty. The thirst was so overpowering that I braved the weird, silent darkness and ran my ass downstairs, where I gulped some water before running back up. In the morning, we awoke to discover that the house had been vandalized. The pumpkins, which the family had set out before they left, were all smashed, some thrown down the street of this very nice, wealthy neighborhood. Their mailbox at the end of the driveway had been absolutely destroyed. Thinking it must have been some teenagers having fun on Halloween, we looked around at the other homes to see if they had been damaged too. Nope, not a single house had been bothered. In fact, the neighbors' pumpkins sat untouched and their mailboxes remained intact. The only house to have been vandalized was the one in which we were staying. Warning sign number four. By this point, Sarah and I were done. We apologized to Chris, but told her that we absolutely could not stay there another night, and we began packing up. Eventually, Chris came to the same conclusion and left with us, saying she would come back the next day to check on things. I mentioned that we were students at a Christian college, right? Well, we met up with Chris a few days later, and she told us that she had gone back to the house to check on it, just as she said. She told us that while she was there, she began to, quote, pray over the house, starting in the basement. While she was doing this, she said that pots, pans, tools, etc. in the basement began to creak and bang. Even though this scared her, she continued to pray as she stood in the basement. Then she saw a shadow on the wall in front of her. A shadow in a room with no windows, in a locked house where she was the sole occupant. This girl must have had some big brass balls because she continued to walk around the entire house praying. She said that the only room in which she felt a sense of peace was in the mother's art studio on the third floor. She said she was A, never going to house sit there again, and B, felt obligated to tell the usual house sitter K what we had experienced. I believe Chris was telling the truth about her time there, praying. It made sense combined with all my gut feelings. Still, I didn't know if telling Kay was the right thing to do. A few weeks went by, and Sarah and I were eating hummus and pita at our favorite restaurant, the Pita Inn. We saw Kay there, too, and sat down to join her. Eventually, the subject of the house came up. Chris had clearly told her what had happened, so we filled in the details of what we had experienced. Kay began to cry. After speaking with Chris, Kay felt that she had to let the owners of the home know. They were devout Christians, and the possibility that their home might be a haunted nest of demons or portal to hell might be important for them to know. After hearing all the gory details, the mother of the family apparently grew white. She told Kay that the daughter, whose room I was planning to sleep in, had been involved in the occult, and that she had, unsuccessfully, thank goodness, attempted to complete suicide in the bathroom where I was drying my hair. Ladies, let me tell you how fast that hummus and pita turned into a dry-ass ball of wallpaper paste in my mouth. It had all been real. That gut feeling was right all along. I had ignored my mother's sage advice and managed to stay in a legit haunted house on freaking Halloween. Many years and Halloweens have passed since then, but I find myself even more acutely sensitive to that voice. Thank goodness I have a wonderful husband who also trusts my woo instincts and has never once balked when I've said something like, I have a bad feeling, let's go back, or I don't like this, we should leave. It helps he was taught to listen to that little voice too. I'm attaching pictures from my wedding in Savannah to provide context for my previous email. I'm very silly and forgot to send them originally. The first picture, in which my husband is giving a toast, was taken in the parlor when I felt the pediatric ghost hand touch me. The second picture, where I'm getting dressed, is to show you the back of my gown. Right at the top is where I felt that gentle, ghostly touch. Bonus, my best friend One Lung, who has written into the show, can be seen kneeling in front of the window facing the camera. That's also the same window where, later that night, the kind of angry mama ghost told me I needed to get home ASAP. And the final pic is my most favorite picture ever, of my sweet guy and I exchanging vows and laughing because I put his ring on the wrong finger. As I said before, I'm very silly sometimes. Thanks for reading my long-ass tale. My husband has also become a listener, and the show has become a frequent topic of conversation over our nightly Jack and Cokes. Keep it creepy, sisters!
Oh, I remember your original story very well. Beautiful gown. Mm-hmm. And I would say to touch your back, where you'd have to be like 4.5 feet tall or something like that, which is the size of, I don't know, probably 8, 9, 10, depending on.
Yeah, tiny ghost child. Also, I feel like we see a celebrity. We get to see One Lung. What's up?
Shout out, man.
Shout out to One Lung.
Hey, One Lung.
What's up,
One Lung's been mentioned now, I think, more than any other friend in various people's submissions.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Wells, for all of this. Man, this is the kind of house, though. This feels like something that I feel like you might get into. You know, where you're like, you had a buddy to like, sleep over in this house with me. Like, it's all right.
That I would get into.
Yeah,
I would move into.
No. I feel like you would get into, like, you know, a buddy of mine was house sitting and we ended up like going and things were weird, but we stayed.
It would probably be me being like, let's go up and explore what that cradle's going on in that room. That whole image of just a wooden cradle in the middle of a room, this was the most warm, welcoming house ever. Why do you have that?
Yeah, why'd you...
Rosemary's Baby-ish.
Yeah, let's not leave weird toys and stuff that's like out. But yeah, I think the vibes that you feel, I mean, whether it is energy in the form of conscious energy or just energy in the form of like negative energy of something that was going on there, I feel like that is something that's like palpable that you can feel. And especially with your now history that you've had going from there to Savannah and all the spooky stuff, I feel like you have an openness that certainly seems to lend itself to this, which I guess is a double-edged sword.
Yeah. The Halloween stuff being destroyed and that being the only house, maybe some local kids did do it, and that house is known as like the haunted house. So they kind of, you know, targeted that one. Anybody that smashes pumpkins should have to report to jail for at least 24 hours.
Unless you're Billy Corrigan, fuck you.
Yeah.
Whether I had a ceramic pumpkin as a child, my mom had these cute ceramic pumpkins, and the kid next door came over and smashed it. And to this day, I'm still pissed off at him. Mm. And I must have been Ella's age when that happened. I'm
like, don't smash things that aren't yours.
Yes, destruction for destruction's sake is just, especially when it's not your shit, that pisses me off so bad. But hopefully, it was just some rapscallion neighbor, some neighboring teens, and not any, nothing spooky or woo-woo that's strong enough to throw a pumpkin or destroy a mailbox. Yeah. I don't like that.
I don't know. All those animals leaving. Animals know stuff. Crazy also, you couldn't find them. They're like, we're getting the fuck out of here.
We'll come back.
Also, did no one say, by the way, there's a bunch of animals in the house you need to care for too?
You tell the owners, by the way, and they all ran out. So I don't know. The cats haven't eaten in days.
All your animals have left. I don't know what to tell you.
We left to go to a party. We came back. We fell asleep. We, in fact, didn't sit for this house at all because it was your decoration. Are destroyed. Your animals are gone. Someone slept in your bed like Goldilocks.
It was too creepy.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
but so man. Validating in your feelings when very sadly the mom's like, yeah, my daughter was into some really terrible stuff and then tried to kill herself. That's that'll do it. That'll blow your hair back. And I wouldn't want to go back there knowing that.
Yeah. Once you have the mom turning ghost white or like white as a sheet and being like, oh God, I'm like, then you felt stuff in there too, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I don't know for sure. I don't know what you did, but thank you, Wells, and we look forward to your future creepy stories. I'm sure you got way more too. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Well, this final one is from Kelly, and the subject line is, it's almost June. Dear Christy and Heather, hello. Let me begin by saying that I love your show and appreciate how you use your platform for empowering women, sharing knowledge and wisdom, and for truth-telling. It's clear that you spend a significant amount of time researching your topics, and you always handle the delicate topics with care, which shows your true, empathetic nature. I saw you in Pittsburgh and Cleveland for the Full Moon Energy Tour, and I look forward to getting to see you again in the future. My story begins 20 years ago. On March 30th, 2006, I gave birth to my older daughter. We came home from the hospital in early April, and because I'm a teacher, I was home all summer with my girl. Northeast Ohio in April can still be quite chilly, so no windows were open yet to let any fresh air inside. One day, in mid to late April, I was standing in the middle of the family room, holding the baby. A relatively strong breeze blew past me, ruffling my hair and leaving behind a scent of roses. I was not a fan of anything rose-scented back then, and as a mom to a newborn, I wasn't using any lotions or soaps that were heavily scented, and if I was, it definitely wasn't something that smelled like roses. It was odd, but I was tired, caring for a newborn, and likely needed a shower, so I didn't think much of it. By May, I was comfortable putting her down for naps in her crib in her room upstairs instead of in the pack-and-play that we kept in the family room. One day, she was upstairs napping when I heard music play through the baby monitor. There were no toys or anything in her crib that played music, except for the baby Einstein mobile hanging above her. I continued to listen and realized that the music I was hearing was not familiar. It certainly wasn't any of the music that was programmed to play when you push the blue triangle, yellow circle, or red square. I decided to walk upstairs and peek into her bedroom. When I poked my head in the door, I saw that the mobile was spinning and that the music was, in fact, coming from it. Mind you, my daughter was only about 6 weeks old at this point, so she was not able to reach nor strong enough to push the buttons on the mobile to make it play. I crept over to the crib to check on her, and she was fast asleep. I stood there for a bit and watched the mobile moving and playing music I wasn't familiar with before I decided to leave the room. The same scenario happened a few more times. During the times when she wasn't in her crib, I played around with the settings on the mobile. I pushed all the buttons, and I was never able to replicate or find the music that played during those times when the mobile worked by itself. Another time, I had to get up in the middle of the night to feed her because I was breastfeeding. Her room was right next door to my husband's and mine. As I walked out into the hallway, I heard a noise. I quickly realized that it sounded like the vent slash fan in the bathroom down the hall, like it was running. I walked down the dark, dark hallway with trepidation to see if that really was what I was hearing, and if so, to turn it off. The switch was up and in the on position, so I turned it off. I walked to the baby's room, fed and changed her, then went back to bed. The next morning, I asked my husband why he got up in the night and used the hallway bathroom instead of the one in our room, and why he left the fan on. He assured me that he did not get up at any time in the night to use the restroom, and if he had, he definitely would have used ours. I chalked it up to another weird thing that happened in the house since we brought the baby home. Strange occurrences continued, but one night in June, something happened that I will never forget. It was in the middle of the night, because of course it was, and I was asleep. I don't really know how to describe what happened next, but in my dream, I got up and walked out of my room and next door to my daughter's. It was strange because it felt like a dream, but it was happening in real time. I made my way across the room to where her crib was. As I leaned over to look at her while she was sleeping, something grabbed me by the throat before I could lay eyes on her and slammed me up against the wall above the bookshelf perpendicular to her crib. I was gasping for air and trying to call out for my husband to come and help me, but I couldn't get the words out loud enough. I remember looking down to see what was holding me up against the wall, roughly 6 feet in the air, but it wasn't really anything, at least nothing with a definitive shape. It was just a black mass, but it was strong. I was kicking my legs, trying to get free. I woke up, or whatever, kicking my legs in bed while whisper yelling my husband's name. I laid in bed, gasping for air while trying to figure out what the hell just happened. After I calmed myself, I got out of bed, my physical body for real that time, and went into my daughter's room to see if she was okay. She was sleeping like a little angel. I then went back to my room and eventually fell asleep. Fast forward 10 years to mid-June 2016. I now had two daughters, and my husband and I were 2 weeks away from our court date to dissolve our marriage. I had put the house on the market 2 months earlier, and it sold rather quickly. The girls and I were set to move out at the end of June, just before our dissolution was final. One night, I was in the finished basement watching a movie. I don't remember if the girls were upstairs in bed or if they were at their dad's new place, but I was alone. The lights were on, the TV was on, and everything seemed normal. Then, all of a sudden, everything went black. A disembodied voice behind me very clearly said, "It's me." The next thing I remember, I was gasping for air. The lights and TV were on, and the movie was playing. Had I fallen asleep? If I did, the elapsed time between falling asleep and snapping awake happened very quickly. I sat there just thinking to myself, what the fuck? I didn't finish the movie because I was too perturbed by what just happened to focus on it. I turned the TV and lights off and headed upstairs. I wasn't sure about much of what happened, but I was certain of one thing. Whatever that disembodied voice belonged to was the same darkness and energy that had a hold of me in the nursery 10 years earlier. It seemed to be taunting me. When the girls got a little older, I told them about these occurrences. They are into all things paranormal. I am the mom, after all, who told you during the VIP meet and greet in Pittsburgh that I had taken my daughter to an overnight stay in the haunted Franklin Castle in Cleveland for her 15th birthday, because that's what she wanted to do. The girls and I, along with my mom, who will be 73 on May 29th, actively seek out haunted locations to visit and stay, such as Gettysburg and Salem. But I digress. When I put together the fact that these two events happened in June, nearly 10 years to the day apart, the girls and I have been left wondering if this entity or experience, whatever it is, will visit or happen in the house we've been living in for the past 10 years. Was this experience unique to me in the house we moved out of, or will it follow me? It's been a long wait, but it's almost June 2026. What do you ladies think?
Oh, you got to tell us because we're already at June 4th.
Mm-hmm, it's happening.
Ooh, Kelly. Well, if it's mid-June, you got a week or so.
Yeah, that's
true. I'm hoping this thing doesn't come back because it sounds terrifying and there's nothing scarier than when you have a baby and some weird ass fucking noise or voice comes through the baby monitor and you got to go deal with it.
Especially a music sound that you don't recognize. Like, it's one thing that's like the music on the mobile played, which is freaky enough, but could be like the battery is lodged in a weird way or the button got stuck. But if it's like, hey, da, 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 you're like, this isn't baby mobile music.
It's not even from this this century. What are we listening to? And Baby Einstein's all classical music.
Yeah, like, what even is this? No, that would freak me the fuck out. Yeah, I would say in anticipation for it. Maybe you cleanse your space, you spray some, I don't know, some Florida water, put some good crystals out and make a declaration of like only good things are allowed here. Any darkness is banished from our sanctuary home or something like that. And if mm-hmm. it's like, it's me, be like, yeah, bitch, it's me too. I'm ready to fight your ass. I've been waiting 10 years to fight your ass.
Man, what a story though. If it does come back, you got to contact somebody in Hollywood because yeah. The thing that comes back every 10 years sounds like a movie in the making.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. Especially you're like a new mom and a teacher on summer break or whatever. That's like, it writes itself that she's yeah. just like home alone with a new baby. And then some shit starts popping off. So
you're also very brave to have all these things happen. You're like, I guess I got to go down the hall and see what turned on the vent.
Yeah, like you know what? Sometimes you think about it in a movie and you're like, oh, the grown-up should go check on that. And then in real life, you're like, it's me. I'm the grown-up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the one that has to go check that. You're like,
I think I should wake up the other grown-up in the bed to have him go deal with it instead.
Poke, poke, poke. But yeah, turning mm-hmm. all that stuff off, that would freak me out for sure. It'd be like, why was the vent, the ghost taking a dump in the middle of the night? At least it would start turning the fan on if it was.
I guess so.
It was like, sorry, just some sulfur smells.
It's me.
Yeah, it was me taking a dump. So, well, keep your nose peeled if it's the smell of roses, which I think might be more positive. Usually, I think people talk about smelling that when it's like a loved one that smelled that way. Mm-hmm. Or some people talk about the Virgin Mary. They smell roses when they've been visited. So, who knows? Yeah,
rarely is it a demon brings the smell of roses. Yeah. So, maybe you have something good and evil fighting for residency in your house.
Yeah, you want to foster the good, but you want to be like, could we switch the scent? Is that thank you for being here. So appreciative of your ear. Hate the smell of roses.
How though. Do we feel about lavender?
Come on. What about hydrangea? What about some, what do you call those big ass lilies that have a very
calla lilies?
Yeah, like a big lily or something. Give me a good stench. A good
a big lily.
a magnolia or something. I'm not trying to have roses maybe, but whatever it is, it's probably better than whatever's using your bathroom.
Roses usually I associate with older people too.
Yeah, could be as well. Yeah, or a gardener, someone that was good at roses.
Maybe it's a gardener.
Well, man,
what a tale. If it happens again, take some notes and let us know right back in because we'd love an update. I hope you don't have an update because I hope nothing creepy happens to you. But if you do, then please write us in.
No, but thank you for, I hope that it's completely quiet June, a happy quiet June, smooth
a quiet
sailing.
June.
But if Sasquatch comes, tell us.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for sending that in. And thank you to everybody who sent in your Freaky Friday stories today. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. Speaking of freaky, if you got something creepy caught on camera, found a weird or unexplainable clip online, maybe you just have a funny video you want us to see, send it our way and we'll live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just put in your email, you get immediate access to Sunday Scaries, a whole bunch of content just for signing up for free. And now during Sunday Scaries, we are coming up with on the fly, we'll let you all decide on a discount code that can only be used for 24 hours, where any new member that is signing up gets 50% off their first month. Do it at the highest tier, get 50% off. If you want to drop down, do it after that. You can stack all the discounts too. It's a fun new thing we're doing, so more people can have the opportunity to see all the stuff we're doing over on Patreon. Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather's Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, unpopular opinions and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
Shout out to the Sunday Scaries chat crew for the idea of doing a reading of the subreddit Cogsuckers, where we get into people who are in various ways a little too intimate with their AIs.
It was eye-opening.
and it made me want to close my eyes. Well, we also offer free trials, so you can join for a week at any of the tiers. Check out all the perks, like checking out that new bonus content segment. Cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. But if you stick around, you get so much more.
Ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live stream bonus content. We let you all vote on the content you want to see. You get weekly audio bonus content like those segments we just mentioned, mini-sodes. We just finished one that's a very silly, funny one that is all about a golden throne and not the type you might think of.
Or it's exactly the type you might think of.
Perhaps. Merch discounts and, of course, a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show and submit topics and cases you'd like us to cover. And you'll find fun things like topic-based playlists and tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2027.
Hell yeah. Follow us over at Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, maybe you want to treat yourself to a pep talk, celebrate whatever you got going on, book a cameo now. We would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent, celebrating Father's Day for the Sinisterhood dad in your life, or celebrating your own personal accomplishment, or even getting some advice or a tarot poll. It's a thoughtful gift. You order it right from the website and it comes right to you digitally. Go to cameo.com/sinisterhood to get yours now. Where can people find you online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the web at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy.